These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
I mean, he's very much locked in. He's putting great swings on the ball. He probably even at that point where he's not thinking about it much. He's just going out there and playing. He's just reacting. And what he's doing is obviously very nice to see. I think he's feeling very confident. He's hitting the ball really hard.
That, of course, Rocco Baldelli, Twins manager, on a red-hot Byron Buxton. Welcome into Talkin' Twins. Zolgad, Jake DePew, as always, on Mondays, and executive producing, doing a fantastic job, our guy Declan Goff. The Twins are supposed to open a four-game series today as we record this on Monday against the Boston Red Sox. That will not take place, at least today. The game has been postponed after the tragic events in Brooklyn Center on Sunday. We don't know when the Twins are going to play next. Again, the assumption as we record this is Tuesday, but we'll certainly be looking back at what happened in recent days with the Twins. But want to do at least acknowledge what is going on here in town, which is obviously, Jake DePew, far more important than the sport of baseball.
It is, and it feels weird now to just do a baseball podcast, and I mean that's what we're going to do. But I don't want to dive too far into this, other than to just say I think it was the right decision, and I think athletes and sports as a platform, and they're using it, and I think that's a good thing. And I know a lot of people disagree with me, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. All right, sir. So let's get to in the awkward transition that we're about to do. Let's get to the baseball side of things. And I've decided that today's show is going to open with a segment called Leading Off with Jake DePew, because the only message I got from you in your list of notes of topics for this show was I want to talk about or lead with the Twins, Rocco, I believe you said, and the front office. And so I'm going to turn the platform of the Talkin' Twins podcast. I am going to hand the ball to you and allow you to run with your thoughts on those topics.
All right. So obviously there's a lot to get to.
That's why you're leading off.
No, I like this new segment. So I think what bothers me about the last few days, these extra inning losses in particular, but yesterday too, is in my opinion, and I think Derek Falvey and Thad Levine have done a great job. They seem like really good guys. I'm not advocating for firing them. They've turned around the franchise. But I do think that they're not putting the team in the best position to win because I think they're holding down Kirilloff due to service time. I can't prove that, but I think it's service time manipulation. And I think we've seen a number of situations in the last couple of games where having Kirilloff would have really helped. In particular, Saturday's game where they pinch hit Astudillo for Kyle Garlick, which I didn't understand that move at all. But can you imagine having Kirilloff on the bench to pinch hit in that situation? And he would have been on the bench if he was on the roster, because he wouldn't have started against a lefty that game. And so that's just, you know, that's one situation where it was very clear that they didn't have a player who could really help them for no other reason that I can think of other than service time manipulation. Now, they'll say he had a bad spring. I'll say 30 at-bats in spring training means nothing. So that bothers me. Service time manipulation, just as a general principle, bothers me, and it really bothered me when they did it to Buxton in 2018, and I think they're doing it again. So that's my rant on the front office and Alex Kirilloff. As far as Rocco, again, all the same things. I think he's a good manager. I don't think he should be fired, anything like that. But I do think he's made some strange moves, and I think it's cost them in these close games. I think, again, on Saturday, that Astudillo move, you know, I get that he puts the ball in play, but like Kyle Garlick is on the roster for one reason, because he's a pure hitter. That's the skill that he brings. Now, he mashes lefties, but he does well against righties too. I know his career numbers against righties in the big leagues they're not great in a tiny sample size. In 2019, he had a slugging percentage over 1,000 at AAA. Mm-hmm. Now it's the PCL, but still against right-handed pitching. So to me, that move made no sense. I want Garlick in there every time. I also didn't understand bringing Colomé back after he'd just thrown 24 pitches the day before and hadn't looked good the day before in yesterday's game. Now, that's second guessing because he gave up the lead, obviously. But Robles looked great in the eighth inning. I think he'd only thrown like 12 pitches.
11 pitches, 9 strikes.
Thank you. And with the rest of the bullpen taxed, to me, it made perfect sense to bring Robles out for a second inning there, rather than bring in Colome, who again had thrown a lot of pitches and was facing the top of the order and hasn't looked good this season. So again, it's second guessing. If it had worked out, we'd be talking about Buxton and not all of these things, but it didn't work out. And in my opinion, it was because of mismanagement in those game situations by Rocco.
Good job, Ben. That was a good job. That's a lot to cram in. You have opened up Pandora's box, and I would like to. So I feel like I'm on a game show right now, and I can pick the Kirilloff box, I can pick the pitching box, or I can pick just the general what are you doing Rocco box. Okay, so I'm going to open. Let's see here. I'm tempted to open door two, but I'm not going to yet. At least that can come later in this show. I'm going to open door three, and I want to talk about something that I don't think is second guessing at all. I think it's first guessing of something that you had a season to work with. And I, quite frankly, I think it's the most confusing thing about Rocco Baldelli's decision-making in-game strategy. Extra innings. Okay? Jake, I'd like to go there.
Mm-hmm.
Extra innings. All right. And I know that there are some people that vehemently disagree with what I'm about to say. But I find the strategies that we have found about the fact that we start the 10th, and that's what we do, okay? Too bad. If you don't like it, that's fine. But it's how we start the 10th with a guy on second base. Jake, I feel that it is very equivalent as far as altering your brain philosophy about your sport to what hockey coaches had to go through for 3-on-3 OT. Because it's still the game. Like, it's not a home run derby. It's not a shootout. But it's definitely takes different strategies and different thought processes than you put into place in hockey in the first three periods or in baseball in innings 1 through 9. So what I don't understand is it's become crystal clear to me that the goal should be, like, if it's me, the goal should be I don't need to score 5 runs here. Like, it's unnecessary for the most part. I'm sure it'll happen once in a while. But what I need to do is I need to score a run or preferably 2 runs. But I'm playing for that, okay? And the Twins are 0-3, and I know that the guys now at Bally Sports North have decided that the whole format's completely unfair, blah, blah, blah. But the Twins are 0-2 on the road and 0-1 at home. So they have found ways to lose in as both the visiting team and the home team. Why is Rocco treating this after a year of watching it and now we're into 3 games into 2021, year two? Why does he treat this like it is the 8th or the 7th? It's like he's waiting for, oh, yeah, where's the hit? Oh, once we get the hit, we'll score that run. I have found a few things confusing. One, go back to Detroit. Nelson Cruz singles to right. Polanco's on second. They don't send him. They don't send him as if they're playing for, we got to score a bunch of runs. No. Try and score that run. Make the guy in right field make a perfect throw. On Saturday, the Mariners, to me, put on a tutorial in what you do. And I know we hate the bunt now, right? But the idea is get the guy to third, try to get that guy in. Like, let's start with getting one guy in. And the Twins, again, are like, we're sending our guys up there. To your point, Ostadi is going to come up, and he's going to swing, and he's going to get a hit. It's quite obvious to me, and I am not Baldelli, okay? And you're not either, but it's become obvious that there needs to be a different thought process and strategy here. Why are you not putting that into place? Like, what's so hard to absorb about the fact that once you get to the 10th, the game changes? It just does. The circumstance changes. I personally think it makes it fun. A lot of people hate it. What do you think?
Well, I agree with most of what you said. Another thing that bothers me about it, you know, watching the postgame presser with Baldelli, and again, I like Rocco. I think he and I would have a lot in common. We could probably, we would relax well together, I guess I'll say. But what really bothers me about his post-game press conferences, or at least yesterday, on Saturday, is he was kind of complaining about this rule change, you know, saying you know, it's artificial and it's not what we're used to playing, and it's almost anticlimactic. And to me, it's like, dude, take a little accountability. Like, those 10th inning situations, that's when the manager really comes into play. Like, the manager's job is never more important than the moves he makes in those situations, I don't think, you know? And the fact is, they've played 3 extra inning games, and they haven't scored a single run, you know? So, like, if you're Rocco, say, you know what? I need to maybe reevaluate some things. I need to do a better job of making some of these decisions. And it's just the lack of accountability that really bothers me, you know? Like, just admit, you screwed up. Like, we all screw up, you know, or we make decisions that don't work out. And, like, I get the rationale behind most of the decisions. Like, I don't agree with pinch hitting Acedillo, but I get the rationale that he puts the ball in play. But, like, at least acknowledge, like, yeah, we've sucked so far in these situations. Instead, he says, it's 10 at bats and I'm not going to evaluate anything based on 10 at bats. Well, those are 10 of the most important bats of the year. You've lost 3 of your four games,
it's 3 wins potentially. Yeah. You're right. Yes.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, just acknowledge it, man. You know, it's the same thing with the 18 game losing streak last year. They didn't, you know, the last couple of years in the playoffs, they didn't even want to acknowledge it. It's like, I don't understand that. We all make mistakes. Just admit it.
Stare it down. I agree completely.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah. Also change your thought process. Play small ball. Like, you need to. You need. You're not playing for 4 runs. You're just not. It's okay. But like, in the bottom of the 10th against the M's on Saturday, you knew the stakes. You had to score 1 run, and then get it to the 11th, and then we'll go through the exercise again. And it was as if he's like, well, if he's still playing normal baseball when we've altered the rules. So, like, you, I don't care. The point is, I like it. Lots of people don't. Doesn't matter what we think at this point. What matters is, how do you adapt to it, right?
Right. And here's again, I know we're harping on one decision, but the Acedillo over Garlic thing. The strategy there, if you're not going to bunt with Acedillo, then the strategy is take 3 shots at knocking in the runner from second. Well, who do you think has a better shot at getting a hit? Kyle Garlic, who's only on the roster because of his ability to hit, or Acedillo, you know, who puts the ball in play, but, you know, his numbers aren't as good as Garlic's, you know, historically and in the minors and all of those things. Like, that's what I didn't understand. I figured when they pinch hit Acedillo, he was going to lay down a bunt, you know? And so if you're not going to do that, like, put Garlic in there. He's a very good hitter. You know, like, that just made no sense to me. I agree on sending Polanco too. That's a second guess, you know, and if they knock him in.
But you should always send that guy. Like, unless it's a hit to left field and the guy is going to be out by a mile. Like, if the ball goes to right field, right, and the guy can run on second at all, you got to send him. Because you need that. Because that's, you're not playing for anything but that one run. So, like, so it has to be, like, if it's a ball to left and he's going to get gunned, don't do it. But Nelson Cruz hits that ball to right. It's not a second guess to say your strategy in spring training should have been, if that happens, Tony Diaz, you got to send him.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like that ball was, I know Nelson Cruz hits the ball hard generally, but that was a ground ball through the infield. I feel like Polanco would have scored on that, you know, 80%. It would have taken an absolutely perfect play to get him.
He can make the throw. Yes.
Yeah, and instead they put the contact play on, and Polanco was thrown out by 10 feet. The other benefit of sending Polanco on the Cruz single is it puts pressure on the defense, and, you know, there's a chance that ball gets away in that play at the plate, and Cruz is able to advance to second, and then you bring in a pinch runner for him, and it's like you're starting the inning again with a runner on second. I know that's really going a couple steps sort of down the line, but, like, they should have sent him there. That ball was not scorched to the point that he would have been thrown out. I know there were no outs, but that was a mistake. And the bottom line is, this is a very good team that's only 5-4 because they've haven't handled extra innings well, and they haven't handled the 9th inning well, at least yesterday. And those are partly on the manager.
Complaints are done for now. I want to turn the discussion to one of the most exciting things in Twins baseball in recent years, probably, the start of Byron Buxton. How much fun, how much for all of those who are like, God, Mackie and Declan and Jake and Judd are negative and they're picking at the Twins and they don't like this team. Honest to God, how much fun is this to watch?
It's an unbelievable amount of fun. I love watching Buxton. And, you know, Judd and I were texting about this yesterday, but like his story and the way he's developed has been so interesting. There have been so many ups and downs in his career. And, you know, you never know what these guys are actually like, but he seems like a good guy and he deserves this because he's gotten a lot of crappy luck along the way. And he got, you know, set. He didn't get called up in 2018 for service time, and all of these things. And for him to really be putting it together, and let's be honest, he put it together in 2019, 2020 too, 2020 as well. He just got hurt. But this is like, I mean, he's the best player in baseball right now. I tweeted that. I mean, he is. I think he leads. He leads the league in OPS. I bet. I'm fairly certain. I know he's tied for the league lead in home runs. And he's playing Gold Glove center field. Like, I just love, I love everything about this. He's for sure my favorite player on that team to watch and has been throughout the years. And I'm glad he's putting it all together. If he stays healthy, if he plays at 140 games,
I'm knocking on wood right now.
I know. But at anywhere close to this level,
yep.
It's him and Mike Trout for the MVP. You know, they're battling for the MVP. So it's great to see, man. And he seems super confident. I loved his comments post game when he was like, "I don't care about the MVP. I want a ring." It's part of why I've loved Buxton for a long time, and I'm happy to see that he's having success. I'm happy that Twins fans get to see, what he can do. And man, the sky's the limit for him.
He is punishing baseballs, Jake. He is punishing, mm-hmm. like he is taking out what, 5 years of frustration, right? Against probably the Twins, against the injuries. When he hits the ball now, he's not like, "Oh, that's a nice single." He is punishing the ball. That home run was Snowian when Snow was going well. That thing mm-hmm. was crushed. He is crushing the baseball. This is so much fun to watch. And I mean, and this is like the dream, right? Like to go back on Buxton and be like, who can he be? And what can this be like? And blah, blah, blah. And I mean, this is a guy who a long time ago, a lot of us said, dude, just hit 250 because you're so good in the field and you're so fast, you know, just hit 250. This guy, oh my God, it's everything being put together. I have my fingers crossed that he stays healthy, that things go well, because it just feels it's another case of, and this is true with Kaprizov, with the Wild, with a few things. It's another case of Minnesota Twins fans deserve this. Like, they deserve this. They've waited for this. This is right now, this is a superstar player. Small sample size. I don't know what's going, you know, if he can stay on the field. I hope he can. But what we're seeing right now is a superstar player. I just am so enamored with going to the ballpark to watch this.
Yeah, and you're right. Minnesota sports fans deserve a lot, to be honest.
I keep saying
they've been shortchanged for a long time. But yes, he is appointment viewing. You know, even if you only have the game on kind of in the background, when he comes up to the plate, you watch because he's has a good chance of doing something spectacular. It kind of reminds me of Moss when he came into the league, because he was such a unique player.
Yeah.
Randy Moss was. And that's, you know, you don't see a lot of players like Buxton that have that level of, almost no players really, that have that level of speed and combine it with power and elite defense. It's fantastic. And if we get to watch this over the next 6 months or hopefully 7 months, we're in for a treat. So
best case too. What's the potential contract here? Like, what is this guy worth? This guy that we're watching right now.
I mean, it's so tough because of his injury history.
I know. You know? But I'm just saying, let's say he can get through a year. You know, if something close to this, because he'll cool off some, but like if something close to this is him, what is that player worth? Because the speed will be declining, but the fact that he seemingly now at the plate has put it together and his at bats are great. That's swinging it terrible at the terrible first pitch in the dirt seems to be gone. My God, the value of this guy would be absolutely through the roof and worth paying. Now you're right. The team's going to come back and say, but you've been hurt, but I'd be so curious to see what that exchange between the team and the player would be like.
Yeah, and if you could somehow guarantee, which you can't, but if you could somehow guarantee that he stays healthy over the next 5 years, then you're looking at a player who would deserve a contract on the level of Fernando Tatis, you know, Trout, some just these monster contracts. I mean, that's the type of guy that he is when he's healthy. Like, and if this power is for real, and I think it is because he showed power the last couple of years, even when his speed declines, he's going to, you know, still transition into an incredible hitter. It's not like he steals that many bases anyways, really. You know, I mean, I think he has one steal on the year.
Stolen base is sort of dead overall.
Yeah.
They've stolen a few this year.
And obviously the speed declining will hurt his defensive value a little bit, but he's still going to be able to play center field for a long time. So, yeah, I mean, if he stays healthy, he's up there with the greats in the game, and he should get a you know, $200-300 million contract. It'll be really, really interesting to see how those negotiations go, because it's talent and ability versus the injury history. And it's just, you can't predict what's going to happen in the future with the injuries.
Flip side to that, my man, what do you do? Miguel Sano is at 091. This has now been 9 games. So I get it. Sample size is incredibly small, but he did not have a good 2020 in the, I think he played 53 of the 60 regular season games. What do you do here? Because the answer that I came up with, without being dramatic and drastic, like, I don't think they're going to release him. They can't send him down. And if you try to trade him right now, you're going to get nothing, Jake. So my response was, I think you need to find a way, at least for now, not to play him every day, because this to me feels futile. Like, you're sending him up at this point, I really think, to fail. There will be hot streaks, I get that, but they're always like within 2 weeks, right? And it's baseball. So I don't see how it's fair to Miguel Sano or the team to run him out on a daily basis, just trying to come up with a solution that is actually realistic, as opposed to the camp that says, keep playing him, it's going to be great, or the camp that says, he's a bum, release him.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you're not going to release him because you're on the hook for his contract. And they signed him to a fairly, you know, a 3-year, $30 million extension. So, and he's due that next year too. But yeah, I mean, I don't think you can keep playing him every day. The counter argument to that is you have to let him work through this to get to those hot streaks, you know? I mean, and that has happened in the past where he's looked awful and then flipped the switch and looked great for a while. To me, the solution is Alex Kirilloff. You know, that you call Kirilloff up and maybe you do a platoon for a while where you have Sano hitting against lefties and Kirilloff hitting against righties, which gives the majority of the at-bats to Kirilloff. And if Sano gets hot, then you know, you move guys around and you get Sano in the lineup more. But I might give him every day at-bats for another week. This is bad. I mean, it's costing them games, you know, like, he came up yesterday with runners in scoring position, I think 3 different at bats, you know, and a couple of them were with less than 2 outs and he couldn't get any of them in.
Yeah.
And that ended up costing them the game.
Absolutely.
You know,
they could have buried them. You're exactly right. They could have buried them and they couldn't.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, at one point Kepler was on second with nobody out, and I think Sano like bounced back to the pitcher. I would have to double check that, but yeah,
that's correct.
Yeah. So like, it's just not a good situation, but Kirilloff solves that because he can play first base. So, you know, April 16th, which is when they can call him up without, you know, losing the year, right, of service time. That's, I guess, when I think they should call. I mean, I think they should call him up today, but if you're going to do the service time game, then call him up April 16th and do a platoon.
Yep. And I think there are some days that you could go Sano at first, okay. Arise at third to rest Josh, which they're going to have to do. Josh can't come back and just play. So some days you go Sano, Arise, Kirilloff in left, possibly. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. then some games, Kirilloff at first, Arise in left, Josh at third. Because I do think with Donaldson, there's going to have to be a workaround on playing time. Like, you're going to have to be, you can't just come back and say, oh, he's fine now. So I think that there is a way to make that work. And again, I think it's a realistic way to keep Sano with the team, get him at bats, get him playing time, but not send him up to the plate every single day now to look awful. And I mean, I really am to the point of this is not fair to people. Like, this is not, and okay, so Jake, let's say we get to June, and from June 1st through the 15th, he goes crazy. We always see this. He then comes back down to earth. He slows down a bit, and then the bad habits start to come back, right? And all of a sudden, he's scuffling. So the only thing that and he now has a tendency to scuffle for months on end. So the only thing that I can think of is possibly the option is less is more.
Yeah, and I also think in situations like he's in right now, where he's in this, you know, these just extended slumps that are just awful to watch, I think if you are going to start him and he hasn't made solid contact all game, then you should pinch hit for him late in the game. You know,
Phil said the same thing.
They could have pinch hit. Yeah, they could have pinch hit for him in the eighth inning on Saturday, and they didn't. And he made an out in a key spot. And, you know, so like, yeah, give him a couple of at bats. If he's looking good, then you keep him in. Otherwise, you pinch hit. Unfortunately, there's nobody on the bench to pinch hit right now because they have 14 pitchers.
Get one of those pitchers out of here.
Yeah.
Why do you have 14? Rocco's not going to use the last guy unless it's a blowout.
Yeah. I mean, I agree completely.
Sorry.
No, I mean,
got
it's
worked
just,
up there.
It's just ridiculous that they don't have any late game options when they're playing all these close games, like, you know, and they traded away. It's like outfield depth. We heard for so long about outfield depth, outfield depth, outfield depth. Well, now, you know, they're forced to start Jake Cave in left field, you know, for a bunch of these games because they traded away Jalen Davis. They traded away Lamont Wade, you know, and they're not calling up Kirilloff. So all of a sudden, they're short on outfielders. You know, they're starting Garlick and Cave, yep, because they traded away all these guys and they won't call up Kirilloff. So they've put themselves in a difficult spot, and it's even harder again, like you said, with the 14 pitchers.
All right, last thing, I want to go back to the positives. You see, we're going negative, positive, negative. Andrelton Simmons provides. And as a baseball fan, I love this. So Buxton is the sexy thing, right? Like, that's the, oh, wow, this is great to watch. But the subtlety of baseball exists to me now at shortstop for the Twins. Simmons ain't flashy consistently. Like, he does make the great play, but you know what else he does? He takes control. He makes the routine play. When there is a pop-up on the left side of the infield or shallow left field, he takes control. I cannot tell you my appreciation and how much fun I think it is personally to watch that. Andrelton Simmons provides a captain in the infield that the Twins have not had in ages, and he brings intangibles. I'll give you one. So the play in Detroit where Diving Jake dove and missed the ball. Now, to Cave's credit, got right up and through. I think they were talking about this on the telecast. Simmons was in the cutoff position originally at a different place, and he saw what was happening. So he changed his positioning because he knew if Cave got the ball that the throw was going to come a different direction. Okay? Like, just, I mean, inside baseball stuff. But Jake DePue, how great is this to see? And it's no rip on Polanco. He was never meant to play shortstop long term. But just the subtlety of having a guy defensively who's this sound?
I mean, I've dreamed about, you know, being able to watch a guy like this defensively every day for a long time. Because, you know, I mean, we have Buxton, but and he is elite, of course. But it's a little bit different with outfielders. With infielders, there's just so much more involved. They get more balls. And but just the little nuances, the little subtleties, like you were saying, in his game are just so exceptional. They're so exceptional. That relay throw he made, I think it was in Detroit.
That's the one.
Oh my God, it's just so good. And he does take control. He's not like, remember when the Twins like a decade ago set down Jason Bartlett? They said it was because he wasn't taking control enough in the.
Yeah, Guardy got really mad. Yes. He wasn't the captain. He's supposed to be the captain. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't have to worry about that with Simmons. I don't care if he hits, you know, 220. this year. Like, he is so valuable. Yeah, the plays he makes, just the little plays that he makes that most guys don't make, those add up. You know, he saves you a ton of runs. I mean, if you look at defensive run save, if you want to get into analytics and all those types of metrics, I mean, he leads the league by a wide margin over the last, like, 5 years. So he's incredible to watch, just incredible. And you're right, it's not the spectacular plays. It's not like the diving plays as much. I mean, he does do that too, but it's the little things. He's a really, really smart.
Yes.
He has a really high baseball IQ, really high baseball IQ. And you can just tell that he is going through every scenario before it happens. Like, do you remember that play last year when Luis Arraez messed up that triple play and only got one out and it ended up being
a really
key play?
Yes.
Like, Simmons makes that play without even thinking about it.
Right.
You know,
you're right.
He's made that play in his head before the ball ever gets hit.
He sees it,
you know,
developing.
Mm-hmm.
You're
mm-hmm.
right.
And so I just, yeah, I was so excited when they signed him.
I also think he changes. I also think he changes his approach on throws, because if he makes a routine play, he will just sort of get the ball there. Like, and at first I thought, I wonder if his arm's not as good as I thought, but then the relay throw in Detroit was a fastball. I think he actually is at a point where he if he has to put zip on the ball, he does, but he knows he doesn't have to every single time. Like, I think he's that smart and calculated.
Exactly. And that also benefits Polanco a lot. Like, I feel like Polanco is going to learn a ton from him, because he's a great offensive player. I know he's struggling right now. Great offensive player for a middle infielder, but he doesn't seem to have those same kind of instincts. And I just think, you know, him and Arraez and all of these guys will learn a lot from just, even if it's just 1 year with Simmons. I mean, he makes everybody better, and it's like up the middle defense with Buxton and Simmons. You couldn't possibly ask for anything better than that. And their defense, other than opening day, has been really good and has saved them a few times.
It's so much fun to watch this, though, because that position's so important. And I feel like the Twins have spent how long now sort of just getting by. They're not awful all the time. I mean, Polanco did try, but they're certainly not great. But I mean, this is the example of what you can have. And it's just such an upgrade. And I didn't realize until I've started to watch Simmons on a daily basis, I didn't realize how much you enjoy the nuance of it. Like, I knew the big play was fun, but it's just the little stuff. And you flash back to the last couple of years and you're like, Polanco does not make that play. So, final thoughts.
It's the beauty of, well, just real quick on Simmons, that's the beauty of baseball, is the nuance, right? The little things. And
absolutely,
he does that stuff better than anybody. Final thoughts. Well, I do want to, you know, this can be part of my final thought, but the starting rotation, we haven't really talked about it much. It's been outstanding. You know, I know Shoemaker kind of melted down in the sixth. I actually thought it was a good move to bring him back out. I didn't have a problem with that, but do the same thing with Barrios and Maeda if you're going to do it with Shoemaker. But the starting rotation has been really, really good. And if those guys stay healthy, and I know Shoemaker's a big question mark in that regard, but if they stay healthy all year, I think they're going to have one of the better starting rotations in the league. And that will help save the bullpen. Again, if they let these guys actually extend out a little bit more, you know, part of the reason the bullpen was so taxed yesterday is because they pull everybody.
Why did Pineda get pulled then?
I don't know. What was his pitch count at?
70-something. And he could have gone to, and look, I am not advocating for 115 pitches, okay? But 90-ish? And like, yeah. So if you, Pineda was pitching pretty well, I thought. So if you bring him back and get him up to approximately 90 pitches, right? That saves the bullpen for Sunday then. Like, I'm confused at the philosophy of when guys get pulled.
Especially when the bullpen is potentially not a weak spot, but not as strong as your starting rotation. You know, I do still think there are question marks with Colome, Duffy, his velo has been down a little bit. He's more sitting 92, 93 instead of 94, 95, 96. And so if that's a little bit of a question mark for you, then it makes even more sense to push those starters one extra inning. And guys like Pineda and J-Hap and Shoemaker, they're on 1 year deals. It, you know, it's not like you're trying to develop them, you know, over a long period of time and keep them fresh. Like, it's okay if you want to kind of burn them a little bit.
And Pineda, I would burn, because he's a horse, I think.
Right.
Like, he's a guy who looks like he can go.
Exactly. So I would hope that we'll see them extended more as the weather gets warmer and they get more built up. But the Twins have been a little there are a lot of question marks in terms of their philosophy on how much they're willing to push their starters.
What is your bullpen rotation right now? So if you were to talk to Rocco and say, Colome is scuffling, not pitching well, it doesn't mean he's, you know, not part of the plan. How would you unveil the bullpen right now in the most important situation?
I send Rocco these emails every day and he never responds. So, but yeah, if I was talking to Rocco,
he's too busy listening to fish.
I would, Rogers would be my number one. And then I think probably Duffy two, Robles three, Colome four, but I'm really intrigued by Jorge Alcala. You know, he throws
he's
gas. He looked good last year. It seemed like he was figuring things out.
Who closes them? Rogers?
Rogers. Yeah. Yeah. But I do think it depends on matchups. Like, I do agree with the Twins on that. Like, if you have a one run lead and there are three lefties due up in the middle of the lineup, I have no problem bringing Rogers in the seventh instead of the ninth. But yeah, if all those conditions are kind of neutral, then I want Rogers closing. What about you guys?
Yeah, I probably do. My only thing is that the philosophy in baseball has changed so much to bring guys into important situations in like the seventh and the eighth. You know, I think right now I would probably try to back end with Rogers. And this might sound crazy, but he's pitched well. Robles. I really like how he's thrown. Yeah. I really do. I think I would give Colome a week of like in the sixth or seventh just to get him sort of right. Like he looks like he's new. Like he looks like, and I don't know. I mean, Chicago might have just said, we're out, he's fried for, I don't know. But he also looks like he's just scuffling. And so I would give him like the sixth or seventh at times. I'd give Duffy the eighth. And I think right now I would back end it with Robles and Rogers. So for now, but I mean, that can change too. It appears it's weird. It's like they feel that they need to use Colome in the ninth, despite the fact that they know he's not pitching great, which I guess I'm confused by, because I thought that the whole thing of not naming a closer was to truly have that be a fluid spot.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that's part of Rocco saying we have, you know, doing that thing that he does where he, you know, wants to show his players that they have confidence in them. And that's part of the reason they keep bringing Colome back after these rough outings.
But I mean, this gives you not naming a start or a closer gives you license to pull the plug and be like, oh, sorry, you're just going to pitch the seventh.
Yeah.
Like I thought that's why they did it.
Yeah. I'm with you.
It's weird.
It's an evolving situation for sure. I think, at some point, they're going to need, an arm to step up from the minor leagues. You know, whether that's a starter like Bailey Ober or somebody like that. At some point, they're going to need somebody to step in because I do think the bullpen is a little bit thinner than last year.
Probably.
For sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, Jake. Thanks much. Talk to you next week. Okay.
All right. I enjoyed it.
Thanks,
guys.
Talking Twins for this week.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.